It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. I'm Sarah Gonzalez in for Brian Lehrer today. Today, women win elections at the same rate as men. Women just don't run for office as much. And to the upper middle class, you're the upper middle class. Just call it that, like the Brits do. We'll talk about this strange American habit of erasing our class consciousness because we feel like we've earned everything we have. And later, the fate of the West as a political idea. But first, it's Sessions Day. The nation's chief law enforcement officer will testify this afternoon at 2:30 p.m. Attorney General Jeff Sessions will testify before the Senate Intelligence Committee, the same committee that former FBI Director James Comey testified before last week. And the things Comey said about the attorney general during that testimony, it definitely increased the intrigue around Sessions' relationship with Russia. When President Trump reportedly told Comey that he hoped he could let the investigation into Michael Flynn go, Comey did not report that interaction to the Justice Department, to Jeff Sessions. Comey said that the FBI as an agency decided not to tell Sessions because Comey said the FBI expected Sessions would soon recuse himself from the Russia investigation, 2 weeks before Sessions actually did. Though Comey did ask Jeff Sessions not to leave him alone with the president, and Comey says Sessions didn't respond to that. And when the Democratic Senator Ron Wyden asked why the entire FBI knew that Sessions would recuse himself, Comey said that the reasons were classified. Here's Comey from last week.
We also were aware of facts that I can't discuss in an open setting that would make his continued engagement in a Russia-related investigation problematic.
Facts that are apparently different from the reason that the public got about why Jeff Sessions recused himself. Publicly, Sessions said he did it because he should, quote, not be involved in investigating a campaign that I had a role with. He was an advisor to Trump. And now, with quite a few lingering questions about the attorney general hanging in the air after Comey's testimony, Jeff Sessions himself will testify publicly this afternoon. We will air the whole testimony live, by the way, at 2:30 p.m., and Brian will be here to preview it on the air at 2 p.m. Plus, yesterday, the state of Maryland and the District of Columbia filed a lawsuit against President Trump, saying that he has violated the emolument clauses in the Constitution because the Trump Organization has earned millions of dollars from foreign governments since he has been in office. And as if there isn't enough to talk about, there are reports today that President Trump is considering firing Bob Mueller, the special counsel investigating ties to the president campaign and Russia. Here with me now to preview the attorney general's testimony and to talk about the emoluments lawsuit is Michael Waldman. Michael is president of the Brennan Center for Justice at the NYU School of Law, and he is the author of The Fight to Vote, which came out last year. Good morning, Michael, and welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning. It's great to be with you.
All right. We have a lot to talk about. Let's start first with Jeff Sessions' testimony. He had said in a statement that he was pleased to accept the invitation to testify before the same committee that Comey did. He said it was, quote, important that he had an opportunity to address the matters that came up in Comey's testimony in the appropriate forum. But his decision to testify seemed to stun much of the political world. Why?
Well, he is on the hot seat. He had to recuse himself, at least, as you say, publicly, when he was basically caught lying in his confirmation hearings to the Senate Judiciary Committee when he said he didn't have any meetings with the Russians, and it turns out he had. There have been since then indications that there was evidence of a third meeting, so far undisclosed. Senator Al Franken of Minnesota has said that they caught whiff of that third meeting on intercepts of the Russian ambassador, Kislyak, someone none of us had ever heard of, or most of us at least had never heard of a few months ago, who now looms as a vivid character in all these stories. And so we know Sessions is a former senator. They get a lot of deference. We know that another former senator, Dan Coats, when he testified last week, found new creative ways to dodge the questions from Congress. He didn't claim executive privilege. He just said he felt uncomfortable answering questions, and they let him get away with it. Sessions could say things like, well, I would answer that question, but I'm recused, so I can't. It's not entirely clear to me what new bombshells or what new revelations we can expect out of these hearings, but it should color in the lines a bit and give us a bit more sense of areas to look at.
Right. So the hearing will be public, and a spokesperson for the Justice Department said that Sessions requested it be public so that the American people can, quote, hear the truth directly from him. But there are some interesting dynamics here when we talk about a public hearing. Some committee members have complained that by making it public, Sessions could sort of hide behind classified information, say that he can't discuss certain matters in public and therefore not answer a whole lot. Do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, they have public hearings. They have closed-door hearings. They can always ask for him to testify behind closed doors. Also, there was the weird phenomenon of him declining to testify in the regular order of business a few days ago as part of the budget process. He really, in a normal environment where the Congress was acting in an independent way, he would be on a very, very thin patch of ice relating to his tenure as Attorney General, because there's so much going on that his department needs to be investigating that he's either in the middle of or can't be part of. This morning, the one big news story that I hope gets adequate attention that hasn't been mentioned yet, Bloomberg News has reported that the Russian effort to penetrate and manipulate the American election last year went deeper than has been reported before. Dozens of state election officials and election databases, where there's the first time evidence that maybe they were trying to mess around with the voter registration rolls. This just kicks it up to a really significant level. And I would hope that the whole government, Republican and Democrat, would be up in arms about this assault on democracy. And Sessions can't even open his mouth if he's recused.
Do you know if Sessions has plans to stick around after the hearing for a closed-door hearing to discuss classified information?
I don't know that. But, you know, one of the interesting dramatic elements here is Sessions, of course, is a former senator. And there's a continued great tradition of courtesy and deference to former colleagues among senators. And he certainly benefited from that when he was up for the confirmation in the first place. A lot of them like him, but I think he wore out his welcome with a lot of them when he lied in his confirmation hearings. So there could be some dramatic fireworks, but it will be hard to know what factual advances we'll be learning from these hearings.
Interesting. And we talked, you mentioned earlier that Sessions was supposed to testify before a different committee. And it is apparently pretty widely understood on Capitol Hill that Sessions has more allies or friends on this committee, the Intelligence Committee, than he does in that appropriation subcommittee he was supposed to testify before.
Which is a problem, since that's the committee that funds the Justice Department. So it again shows that he's put himself in a compromised position in terms of his leadership of the agency. Even again, last night, as we know, this perhaps trial balloon was floated and not really denied by the White House, that President Trump would like to find a way to fire the special counsel, Bob Mueller. And he would have to arrange it so that the Justice Department does it. And this would be so shockingly outrageous. This would be, in any normal situation, grounds for a bipartisan uproar. And it would be, one would imagine, an easy thing for an attorney general to get up and say, no, we're not going to do that. We believe in an independent investigation, whether they mean it or not. But he's recused himself from this, and he's one of the people being investigated. It seems. So, you know, he won't even be able to answer that with all likelihood.
Right. And again, that was news that came out late yesterday that the president is considering firing Bob Mueller, the special counsel investigating ties between the Trump campaign and Russia. And that was kind of a bombshell. The White House has then denied it after a Trump friend went on PBS, I believe, to say that that was what the president was considering. I want to go to listeners. Listeners, if you have any questions for my guest, Michael Waldman, the president of the Brennan Center for Justice at the NYU School of Law, on Attorney General Jeff Sessions' testimony, what we can expect to hear from him, or if you have questions about the emoluments clauses lawsuit, we'll get to that in a few minutes. Anything else you might have, a Russia investigation related question, give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Michael, in light of Comey's testimony, where he revealed some things about Sessions that sort of shocked the political world, Sessions is likely to get questions from lawmakers about his contacts with Russian officials. Just give us some background on the Sessions-Russia connections, what led up to his recusal from the investigation, just to kind of catch us up.
Sure. And it's important to note the White House has not denied that Trump might fire Mueller. It just said, oh, this guy didn't talk directly to Trump about it. So they're happy to let it float around there just to give everybody ulcers. So Jeff Sessions was an important person in Donald Trump's rise to the presidency. He was known as the most hardline member of the U.S. Senate on immigration issues, on criminal justice issues, where he personally killed the bipartisan bill that Grassley of Iowa and others had pushed to reform criminal justice. He backed Trump early, put that red Make America Great hat on, and lent a lot of his staff and intellectual firepower to the nativist part of that campaign. He was one of the chief surrogates. He was one of the only people willing who's in the political system who was willing to speak out for Trump for a long time. During the campaign, it became clear that in weird, new, and unexpected ways, Trump was very soft on, as people would see, on Russia, that he changed the Republican platform last year to soften the criticism of the Russian takeover of Crimea. Trump's campaign manager, Paul Manafort, had to resign when his ties to Putin became too intense. So this was not something that just popped up recently. This has been going on in weird and unexpected and troubling ways for a year. Well, along comes the election, and Sessions is chosen to be the Attorney General. And we start to get revelations that Sessions was involved with this. And at his confirmation hearing, Senator Al Franken asked him if he was aware of contacts between the campaign and its surrogates and the Russians. And Sessions volunteered. He said, well, I was a lot of people called me a surrogate, and I never met with the Russians. And it turned out that that was a lie. It wasn't true. And it's hard to they will say, oh, he just misunderstood the question, or he thought he was talking about his role as a U.S. senator. But he had to correct the record. And then after that controversy, he recused himself. And folks were led to believe that it was related to these kind of public questions, including around the time of the confirmation hearing. In Comey's testimony, he indicated, first of all, that Sessions was in the White House, in the Oval Office, with Comey, with Jared Mueller, and with Trump. And Trump shooed them out of the room to talk alone to Comey. And that was the session where he told Comey he hoped that Comey would, quote, let Flynn go.
Right.
And that's a pretty significant that he was asked to leave the room. And he told Sessions, Comey told Sessions, as you said, I don't want to be alone with him anymore. No evidence that Sessions said why, what happened.
And one of the things that was significant from that testimony is that Comey said that they were planning that he was expecting Sessions would recuse himself 2 weeks before Sessions actually did. When he was asked why, he said, "Well, I can't say, that's classified." But there's something more there. So we have a clip.
In your statement, you said that you and the FBI leadership team decided not to discuss the president's actions with Attorney General Sessions, even though he had not recused himself. What was it about the Attorney General's own interactions with the Russians or his behavior with regard to the investigation that would have led the entire leadership of the FBI to make this decision?
Our judgment, as I recall, was that he was very close to and inevitably going to recuse himself for a variety of reasons. We also were aware of facts that I can't discuss in an open setting that would make his continued engagement in a Russia-related investigation problematic. And so we were convinced, and in fact, I think we'd already heard that the career people were recommending that he recuse himself, that he was not going to be in contact with Russia-related matters much longer. And that turned out to be the case.
All right, so you pretty much lays it all out there. I want to go to a caller. Scott in Westchester has a question for you, Michael. Hi, Scott.
Hi, good morning. Michael, I'm curious how the president has the ability to contemplate removing Bob Mueller as special counsel and where his power ceases, because if he could do this, then where at what point does his authority cease?
It's a great question, and I think that if he does make that attempt or does manage to do it, it would be a very, very grave threat in so many ways to the rule of law. As I understand it, and I don't guarantee that I have this right, Mueller was appointed. The special prosecutor law that was on the books on and off for a while after Watergate had the special prosecutor be appointed by a federal court. And when that law lapsed after, among other things, the abuses by a special prosecutor, Kenneth Starr, during the Monica Lewinsky-Bill Clinton investigation, another kind of less formal method of appointing what's called a special counsel, but it's kind of the same thing, arose. And there's actually regulations about what are the bases for firing a special counsel. A president can't just, under these regulations, just wake up one morning and say, you know what, I don't like this guy, I want to fire him. So as I understand it, the president cannot order a subordinate within an agency fired, but the president can order his people who are in the agencies who have that power to take action. I have read that it would be necessary to undo that regulation, which would be legally really problematic. So I'm not even sure the president has the power easily to fire Mueller. That was the situation, as you might remember, during the Saturday Night Massacre in Watergate. For those who don't remember it or didn't live through it, in October of 1973, before there was a special prosecutor law, there was Archibald Cox was the special prosecutor under sort of similar situation, although there wasn't even the regulatory protection then. And Nixon ordered his attorney general, Elliot Richardson, to fire Cox for seeking Nixon's tapes. Richardson refused, and he was out. His deputy refused, and he was out. And they had to reach down to the Solicitor General, who was willing to do it, and he actually, Robert Bork, and he wanted to resign too, but everyone told him, no, don't do that, the whole agency will fall apart. Here, Sessions is recused and couldn't, in theory anyway, be involved in that. It would be up to his deputy, Rob Rosenstein, who has had a very mixed role here. He wrote that ridiculous memo that gave Trump the ability to claim that he'd fired Comey because he'd been too mean to Hillary Clinton, but then stepped up and appointed a very strong and well-respected independent prosecutor. And, you know, one of the things about Mueller, by all accounts, is he has hired in the last week or two very, very strong, very well-regarded And if you have something to hide, very scary professional prosecutors who Newt Gingrich is running around smearing as Democratic stooges, but that's ridiculous. He's really doing this right.
And I think Howard in Brooklyn, he wants to know whether these concerns are valid around Mueller, if he can be a fair special counsel heading that investigation. What do you say to that, Michael?
I guess I would say that if anybody, I think it's hard to do this. It's a very tough job. Archibald Cox was a John Kennedy and Ted Kennedy ally, and Kenneth Starr was a conservative political activist who was thinking of running for the Senate in Virginia before he was special prosecutor. Mueller is much more of a straight-ahead law enforcement professional. You know, he was the head of the FBI for a long time, appointed by George W. Bush, widely revered, controversial. My organization criticized him during that time for moves he made around counterterrorism, where we thought that the FBI had too many restrictions loosened. But within the law enforcement, intelligence community, and both parties in Washington, he's pretty revered.
Okay. I want to get to the emoluments lawsuit in a second. But first, while we're on the topic of firing or potentially firing people, Sessions' role in the firing of Comey is something to watch during the testimony today also. If Sessions was involved in firing Comey as over the Russia investigation, which is what the White House has said, that Comey was fired over the way he handled the Russia investigation. So then how was Sessions totally recusing himself from the Russia investigation, right? That's a question. Here's another clip from Senator Wyden about that.
How would you characterize Attorney General Sessions' adherence to his recusal, in particular with regard to his involvement in your firing, which the president has acknowledged was because of the Russian investigation?
That's a question I can't answer. I think it's a reasonable question. If, as the president said, I was fired because of the Russian investigation, why was the Attorney General involved in that chain? I don't know. And so I don't have an answer for the question.
Michael, your thoughts?
I'd say Comey just asked the question very well. that is one of the areas, as you think of Sessions' ability to dodge and weave on the basis of being recused among, or there's an ongoing investigation or whatever, this question of whether he really in fact has been recused is something it's hard for him to dodge and weave. And I would also suggest to listeners who might be able to hear or watch the hearing, Ron Wyden, you'll note, was asking a number of the questions that we've been playing clips from. He's a very skilled questioner. He doesn't make these speeches designed to have a clip or a tweet. He actually elicits information that turns out to be newsworthy or create further investigations. And that was the case in the Comey hearing. He's well known for that. And I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't have the flashiest questions, but the ones that we're going to still be thinking about a week from now, 2 weeks from now.
Mm. And I imagine that Sessions will be asked whether or not he maybe believes the testimony from Comey. Comey said a lot of things that the White House has since denied. And I imagine Sessions will be asked to weigh in on that. For example, if, you know, Comey said that he told Sessions not to leave him alone with the president, and Sessions might have to answer that.
Right. And it's really, he can't claim, first of all, the White House has not claimed executive privilege for any of these testimonies. Even if Sessions wants to say, well, I'm not going to tell you what I said to the president, that's a testimony about two employees of the Justice Department talking to each other. And he is in a somewhat exquisitely difficult spot. Comey said, the president told me to drop the investigation. For a while, Trump's defenders or some of his defenders say, well, he wasn't saying when he said, I hope you can drop the investigation, let Flynn go, and then he fired Comey, well, that was just a hope. That wasn't an actual order or an action. Putting aside whether that's absurd in the sense of, you know, me saying that nice storefront you have there, you know, pity if something should happen to it. Looks very different if you actually then burn down the storefront, right? And Comey did get fired over the Russia thing. But so that this one defense was to try to massage the words that Comey said Trump used and explain them away. Trump then got up and said, it's a dirty lie, I never said those things. And so I could imagine someone asking Sessions, well, you know Comey, you know Trump, who do you believe? If he says anything less than, I believe the president, then he is in a very awkward situation vis-a-vis the president. He after the sort of buttering up festival in the cabinet meeting yesterday, clearly the president doesn't want to hear that kind of thing. But if he says, oh, I believe the president, Comey's lying, then that itself is a rather extraordinary drawing of the lines. So it's there's a lot of dramatics here, although, again, I don't think that we should expect a kind of a Perry Mason moment where the witness breaks down on the stand and confesses everything.
Sessions might not be as generous a witness as Comey was. Comey was also fired from his job as FBI director, so he was kind of in a better position, I think. I want to move on to this lawsuit filed by the state of Maryland and D.C. It claims that Trump has violated the Constitution by benefiting from foreign government as president. And I want to play a clip of the D.C. Attorney General, a Democrat, as Press Secretary Sean Spicer pointed out yesterday when he said that the lawsuit will be dismissed, announcing that. Here's that clip.
Earlier this morning, the state of Maryland and the District of Columbia filed a lawsuit in federal court against the President of the United States. The suit alleges that President Trump is flagrantly violating the Constitution, which explicitly bars presidents from receiving gifts or inducements from foreign or domestic government entities. President Trump's businesses and his dealings violate the Constitution's anti-corruption provisions, known as the emoluments clauses. My office window is just a few floors above where we're sitting today, and I can tell you that as I look out the window and see the tower of the Trump International Hotel, we know exactly what's going on every single day. We know that foreign governments are spending money there in order to curry favor with the President of the United States.
And just to clarify, that Sean Spicer was calling the Attorney General a Democrat and sort of dismissing the lawsuit in that way. But Michael, thoughts on the emolument clause lawsuit?
Well, it's a very interesting and potentially important development there. So as you know, as your listeners probably know, like Kislyak, many of us perhaps were not quite as familiar with the Emoluments Clause a year ago as we are now. But it was a provision in the Constitution to keep foreign governments especially, or the states or others, from giving bribes, gifts, money, business activity to the president, because you wanted the president to be free from corruption and to be independent and only working for the United States of America and not his own or her own self-interest. This has been something that many people have said. Trump has been in violation since noon, the day he took the oath of office, by maintaining his businesses, by not selling them off, and especially, though not only, by opening up this gaudy hotel a block from the White House, which is being used by foreign governments and businesses as the place you go pay homage to the new regime in a sort of a very the kind of way we hear about in other countries, but hope doesn't happen in our country. The Emoluments Clause is being violated. That's the argument.
Okay,
there's a strong and there have been suits up until now by private groups or by restaurants saying that they were hurt. Here, the great issue is standing. Who has the standing to bring a lawsuit like this? The government of Maryland and the government of D.C. among other things, own convention facilities and other facilities that are hurt, and they speak and they have a sort of a sovereign power. So the courts might look more favorably, potentially, on a suit like this than on some of the other suits that have been brought. But it's all new territory. Right. The facts are very damning.
Yeah, I've been reading that there's a similar lawsuit was filed in New York federal court earlier this year by a watchdog, a government watchdog organization, but that this one may have more traction because it's brought on by the state of Maryland and D.C. We have a question from Mark in the Lower East Side about the emoluments clause. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Yeah, so regarding the question of standing and proving harm, if you read the clause, doesn't it present harm to the entire nation? And why would you have to have one specific harm in order to bring a suit with the emoluments? And then also, what's the remedy? If it's only impeachment, we have a Republican Congress, what are the chances of this coming to any real answer?
Well, you're right on impeachment generally. There's never been an instance in the country's history where a party that's the same party as the president has made any serious moves on impeachment in any circumstance. The question on standing, when you go to court, and this is a question of what are courts well designed to do, you have to have what's called a case in controversy. You have to if you go to court, you have to be able to show you were really hurt by something. And courts have frowned on broader standing. Maybe they should, maybe they shouldn't, but they don't like it when taxpayers go in and say, well, I'm a taxpayer, I'm harmed as a general citizen of the country, I don't like this policy or that policy. That's why these cases, a lot of the discussion has been about the specific harm to the people bringing the suits or the institutions bringing the suits. In the recent cases around the immigration executive orders, the states, including attorneys general in places like Washington State, have really been successful in making broad arguments that they have a lot of interests, and they represent those broad interests. And so the courts are going to be entertaining those kind of arguments in a way they don't usually do it. So what if a court rules, yeah, Trump is violating the Emoluments Clause? What would they be able to do? Well, they could order that he would have to sell his business. Or be in constitutional violation. But the caller's right. Ultimately, the ultimate remedy for something that is an unconstitutional state of being or action by a president is checks and balances and impeachment. And it isn't only impeachment. There's all other kinds of things. There's laws that can be passed. There's budgetary tools. Congress has to start doing its basic job before. I think that, you know, when people ask me, what about impeachment? I would like to start with a real investigation of this kind of stuff. And there hasn't been.
And Alan in Brooklyn was going to ask you what avenue could achieve a just result here. Alan, do you feel
morning.
Like you've gotten your question answered?
Well, my basic question may sound a little naive, but having been two classes behind Justice Alito at college, where he did his thesis under Professor Walter Murphy, who was an expert in constitutional law, and he aided at a non-selective university-run club, not at one of the really expensive clubs that catered to the elite wealthy of the university's population, I have to believe that under his somewhat strong loyalty toward his Republican Party friends, I think Sam Alito may be more loyal to patriotic visions of what American democracy is about if push comes to shove. And I would think that he may, if pressed against the wall to balance loyalty to party against possible standing or emoluments issues that might run against President Trump, that I think he'd be somebody who could surprise liberals and do the right thing, but nobody can know until the case comes before him. I don't think he is by any means a Trump Republican. He comes at it from a more principled avenue of conservatism, though I'm not a conservative. I respect his the integrity of his principles, and I think he might do the right thing if he had to face the decision.
Okay, thank you for your call, Alan. The Attorney General in this emoluments lawsuit says that they'll be seeking the president's tax returns if the suit progresses. That would be something. And we will have to leave it there. We've been speaking to Michael Waldman, president of the Brennan Center for Justice at the NYU School of Law and author of The Fight to Vote. Michael, thanks so much for joining us, giving us a preview of what to expect at Attorney General Jeff Sessions' public testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee at 2:30 today. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you. And thank you to you and Brian Lehrer and WNYC for this tremendous coverage every day of this issue. You illuminate it better than just about anybody.